Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Federalist Files. On today's show, I guess this week's show, I said I'd be doing these every single 2 to 3 weeks. Seems like there is things to talk about every single week for me. Maybe I'll do it like weekly, and I'll just rant into the mic. I don't know what else to do. But so this one, mostly we're going to talk about the Republican debate yesterday, or not yesterday, Wednesday. It was kind of boring, to be honest. Vivek, it seems like he's backing off a little bit, but I still do like what he had to say. I thought DeSantis did like a decent job. Tim Scott was better than expected. Nikki Haley, I'm just going to go into this like, I'm just going to talk mad shit about women. But when women decide to act like that and be like, you know, when a woman is assertive, it's almost like she's nagging or she is a bitch just because it's not natural. It's them being in an unnatural state. It's them being in a manly state, a masculine frame. So naturally, that makes it seem like they are naggy and bitchy. And that's honestly how Nikki Haley, I'm like saying names of people I went to school with. Nikki Haley, that's how she came off in that debate. And she was also pumping some big time. The big thing against Vivek right now, what they have against him, is that he ran a company that was part of one of the branches of the company were in China. That's the big attack on Vivek. And it is really, it's like they're grasping at straws. He ran a company that had a branch in China. Then he pulled out that branch in China. Then he created a company to compete with another company in China to try to strip them of everything they had. So, I mean, it's like, I don't know. The guy's a business. The guy runs business. He's an entrepreneur. He runs businesses. I mean, I don't know what else to say. He comes from the private sector. Like, if we're going to attack people, it's amazing that the entrepreneurial class has been able to get attacked relentlessly by not only the media apparatus, like commies, but now we have people in the Republican Party that also hate people that run businesses. And it's not like we're talking about corrupt business guys. We're talking about just like anyone that runs a business is sus to like the Republican Party now. It's great how they can take it. It just shows the Republican Party is shifting to the left when they can take left-wing talking points and they can just whoop them out and actually use them to debate. It's sad. It's sad to watch, honestly. They had that super left-wing, like, Hispanic lady that was asking questions. And she was talking about racism in America. She said something about Donald Trump, this, that. She's fucking, her questions were outrageous. And they were so pointed. And they were just gotcha questions. Like, they were setups. Where no matter how you give the answer, they're just, you know, they're just setting you up to look like an asshole. The way to handle that as a politician, when they ask you a question that's an immediate setup, it's a yes or no question to make you look bad or something, they're trying to set you up, it's very easy actually. What you do is you entirely reject the premise of the question and you just go on to rant. And then if they question you and say, hey, this is the question I asked, just say, I do not accept the premise of your question. I think it's very dishonest. And you're doing the American people a disservice as a journalist or a reporter or as a moderator. That's how you should answer the question. You should be like, it's such a pointed question. It's such a setup gotcha question. And people in America are smarter than that. Even though, honestly, people in America are not smarter than that. I just look at the Krasenstein brothers on Twitter and the way in which they are able to word things and slant things. They really do run like this whole, I'll tell you something, folks, this whole like Jewish people running the media thing or Jewish people running the record labels and affecting this business and that business, I'll tell you right now, there are so many examples, especially when it comes to the media. Those two guys are prime examples. They are horrible. They are so terrible on Twitter. They're running, it's to the point where the DNC must pay them the things that they post and the way that they word things and they plead to emotion, because they have to have like a team helping them word some of these questions, because it's so obvious that it's going to show up in the algorithm the way they word it, and it is made for engagement and it is also supposed to sway people one way or the other, and usually it's based on an emotional argument or something from a institution that is incorrect, meaning like whether or not something is constitutional, you can say, because it's pretty objective when you look at the Constitution with a lot of the stuff, right? But if a court system rules, if you have a bunch of left-wing judges, for example, right? You have a bunch of left-wing judges, they rule that the Second Amendment is somehow not constitutional and you cannot own a firearm, right? The Krasenstein brothers will come out and they will support it because that's what the judge's verdict was and you need to respect the law and order in this specific situation. But then a bunch of people end up, you know, robbing a store or something and the store owner goes and shoots them, respecting his property, respecting the Constitution, then that's a problem because of insert emotional argument here. That's pretty much what you see from left-wing reporters. They are so biased and they have such confirmation bias. And it's like painfully obvious to the point where you wonder if they're paid by the left wing, by the DNC, Soros operatives, this, that, the other thing. And my guess would be, yeah, they probably are. They're paid to push a narrative, which is pretty wild and insane. That's outrageous. But they're supposed to be our honest media reporters. I mean, I don't know if you folks remember, but Erica Marsh, and it's really funny because I was on Twitter for that account. There was a Twitter account. It was called Erica Marsh. It was a left-wing Twitter account, right? Turns out it wasn't even a real person. I believe it was some sort of an AI-generated person. And they were tweeting like from an AI account, but they were super left-wing and super left-leaning. I'm not sure exactly if the person... I know the picture is like an AI-generated picture, I'm pretty sure. And the tweeting and shit turned out to be a bot, I believe. And it was super left-wing. So that tells you that everything... If we have AI bots, right? Machine learning mechanisms, they're using what is considered public source information, open source intel. And that's how this AI is able to generate responses as well as its own opinions, right? If it's left-wing, then that just automatically tells you that's what the media is. The media is left-wing. They are authoritarian commies. And if you can create AI, if you pull out AI out of your ass and it's answering things left-wing, that just means everything out there is left-wing. You know, that's the bias, that's the lean. So to get into this, there's a couple things that Vivek went over that I fully agree with them. Some constitutional stuff, which I thought was interesting. For example, one of them being the 14th Amendment, he actually brings up the jurisdiction thereof piece in the 14th Amendment to claim that people that come here illegally and have kids, those kids are not citizens, which he is correct. And he says tons of legal scholars and judges agree on this. He is also correct. So the statement means that if you come, the jurisdiction thereof, the reason that was created, I think Tim Scott alluded to something having to do with slavery. I'm not exactly sure about that reference. He could be correct. The other reason was if you had diplomats, let's say U.S. ambassadors in other countries, and the U.S. ambassador was there with his wife, and his wife had a child. That child is a U.S. citizen. That is the reason for the jurisdiction thereof, meaning they too, those two people, mother and father, are both U.S. citizens. Therefore, when they have a child, it is recognized in the jurisdiction that they are part of, the jurisdiction they are part of, as in they're U.S. citizens, their kid is a U.S. citizen. Mexican citizen comes to America illegally, has a kid, jurisdiction thereof, they're a Mexican citizen, they're not a U.S. citizen, they're here illegally. That is the whole point of all this whole DACA thing and everything. No one wants to talk about it. What everyone brings up is like, which is hilarious, they bring up something that is written on the Statue of Liberty, and they say, give us your poor, give us your that, give us your that. And this is some campaign cry usually for the left wing to support illegal immigration, saying, oh, well, look what's written on the Statue of Liberty. Hey, first off, just so you know, Statue of Liberty was given to us by the French. No one gives a shit. It's not the Constitution. It wasn't voted on. Nobody agreed to it. It has zero jurisdiction itself, has zero power. In terms of governing documents, right, I mean, you can sit here and you can really make an argument if you're like a anarchist, you can make an argument that the Constitution itself is not a legal document because there's tons of people that were born into it and don't agree with it, this, that, the other, whatever you want to say. But you can make the argument, at least it was voted on by people. People agreed to it, right? Nobody agreed to something written on the Statue of Liberty. It's just there. I mean, there's no process for that, right? There's no self-governing principle of the Statue of Liberty, some excerpt off of there and using it and then applying it to national strategy and policy. Same thing with when they talk about separation of church and state. That actually is not written in the Declaration of Independence. It is also not written in the Constitution anywhere. That was, I believe, James Madison, or was it Thomas Jefferson? He wrote a letter to either James Madison or Alexander Hamilton, I think, talking about separation of church and state. And it was because I think it was in the state of Virginia, the state was getting involved in the church. It wasn't the church getting involved in the state. So it's essentially a plea because the authoritarian government was getting involved in a church. It's not the way that the left-wing liberals always pull it out of their ass, where the church is getting involved in the state. There really is nothing, there is no guiding principle that claims that we cannot be a Christian nation. There really isn't. There is no constitutional mandate saying that we can't implement, if we wanted to, our own national religion, which I honestly at this point would not be a bad idea, which kind of gets to my next point. And this is interesting. We have Vivek brings up the 14th Amendment, right? I have not seen somebody, I mean, I've been watching, I'm trying to think of how long I've been watching politics for. I've seen pundits bring it up, right? But I've never seen like a political candidate bring up the 14th Amendment. So he's been surprising me by the things he brings up. He was talking about foreign relations with Russia and China on the Full Send podcast they had him on, which was he was really good on there too as well. He was saying they have, since 2001, they have an allegiance. They have a treaty or whatever, where they're in allegiance, the two of them. And he said what he would do. He said, we would give Ukraine whatever they have remaining, Russia, whatever they've invaded and taken over at this point, you give to Russia, but this would all be contingent on Russia shutting down their treaty with China, because China right now is funding the entire war for Russia, pretty much. Russia is just their dogs, their attack dogs, as Ukraine is our attack dog, and we're just sending them money. And I don't even think really anything's happening. I think that the money's being totally embezzled. It's being given to politicians, family members. I think Zelensky is a total fraud, obviously. There's just no oversight on any of this shit. We're just sending money there like every few months. We're just sending billions of dollars there for nothing. Like, we don't even know what's happening. By the time things are said and done, we'll end up sending them like $1 trillion, just like Afghanistan. It'll actually probably be like two or three trillion. If it continues as long as Afghanistan did, 20 years, for sure, it'll end up being that much money. So, yeah, like I said, the international policies he was bringing up I thought was very interesting, because he seems to know much more. He's more well-read than everybody else on stage. It's very clear he knows more than everybody. Does that necessarily mean he's the best leader on stage? Does that mean that he will be the best foreign relation-wise? I don't think so. I think Trump was very good, because it's at this point, it's the devil you know versus the devil you don't, right? You have a bunch of candidates up there. You have Ron DeSantis has a very good record as governor, right? But none of these people have been president before. And Nikki Haley, I think she was governor of South Carolina, and she had some weird shit where she took down the Confederate flag off the building. I know. For Nikki Haley, I have zero, you know? I don't think a woman should be president. I don't think she should really even be in power, to be honest. I wouldn't put them, like, anywhere in my government in a position of power at all, ever. So Nikki Haley, I would never vote for, personally. I'd vote for literally almost, I'd vote for Christie over Nikki Haley. That's how much I believe that, you know what I mean? So, Vivek, I had it on the top of, I just keep talking myself out of my topics here. So, he talked about the 14th Amendment. He talked about the international relations stuff. I thought that his approach with, let me see, the CCP. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Some Biden stuff. We'll talk about that later. I thought his approach was a little too nice. Oh, you know what it was? You know what I'll tell you? What I did also like hearing from him, which I have not heard from any candidate since I started following politics in like the in probably 2016, 2017, I started following. I've never heard a candidate say, we're talking about gun control, Second Amendment shit. Everyone just keeps saying mental health, mental health, mental health. And what his answer is, he goes, this country needs a religious, like, revitalization. It needs faith-based approaches when it comes to mental health issues. And I think that a lot of men, what the problem is with men in general, right? I've heard people say that. I've heard Andrew Tate say this, actually, this specific thing about men. Men are being told to be super emotional. They're being told by therapists, by women, by, family members that are trying to be inclusive and trying to be nice and tolerant. Men are being told to be weak. Men are being told to act out your feelings. It's okay to feel and cry and do all of these things. And he said, this is how you get school shooters. This is how you get rapists. This is how you get murderers. You get people that cannot control their emotions because they've been told and they've been trained their entire lives to be told to act out on their emotions and be emotional and be like a giant crybaby bitch, right? Which he's right. That's currently what's going on. I think that's one of the reasons. I think the other reason is that the sociology slash psychology crowd, this new study that really holds no basis. If you look at how much those people make, it's meaningless. Like, there's no value in their job, in their work. In other words, they make nothing. No one cares about them. No one cares about your social worker. People that go to school for sociology degrees, everyone just laughs at them. They're fucking clowns. It's a joke. Everybody knows it's a joke. It's like a bullshit ass study. On the side of men, when you're being told that everything you do that actually is good for society and has been good for society for thousands of years is toxic, when you're being told being a man, being masculine itself is toxic, then that's a problem. And since men are devolving and repudiating this masculinity, and they're considering it themselves toxic because they want to fit in, which, if you've noticed, that is a woman trait. Trying to fit in a general sense, like really, really fitting in for the sake of fitting in, and having zero ethics about it, and not following your own standards, your own morality, right, is a woman trait in general. So women, they want to be accepted by their peers. They're super worried about it. They'll do almost anything for acceptance. They're much more influenceable because of this, and they will act a certain way just to get acceptance from friends. They always want the coolest clothes. They want like young girls. That's how it is. They have these weird little clicky groups. But you always notice there's a lot of it's much more often at school when you're in middle school, when you're in high school, and then obviously when you're an adult. There are men that are by themselves. There are isolated men. There's that one kid at the table that's sitting by himself eating lunch. There's a few kids doing so. And at some points in my life, I was that kid, so I would know. And you stand on your principles, you stand on your morality, and you don't care if, like, you are okay with being alone, is the point. You are okay with being a social outcast because what you believe and what you think is moral in your heart, other people do not agree with, right? So when women are being told your feelings and your emotions and act this out, women do not act that out but via violence. They're just not the same way. They're not violent characters like men are. Men at their very roots can be violent. So yeah, it's I don't know where I was going with this rant, but the whole point is that men are okay with being independent, right? They don't need to be dependent on people, and that is a masculine trait. And it seems like that trait is being stripped, and it's being told that that is toxic. There's a lot of things like defending women is like a toxic masculinity. They have this word mansplaining. I mean, it's like fucking ridiculous. Oh, little dick energy. That's like another one. Oh, he's got little dick energy. Oh, he's got or short man energy. All this shit. Like, no one says that shit about women. No one says like fat chick energy, like big labia energy, saggy tit energy. I mean, there's a bunch of different ones you can think of, like hair falling out energy. I don't know if there's a word for that. Like weak hairs, thin hair energy, bad skin energy. Like, no one says any of that shit about women, right? But they say it about men. It's acceptable. So yeah, men are definitely taking on the chin much harder than women are in today's society. They're being told natural, primal things are not acceptable socially, and they should change, and they should be more like women, essentially. Which I think is honestly, I think that's the biggest problem that our society faces right now, is there's this like weird push pull. And Vivek's answer is that we need a faith-based approach with some of this depression stuff. And as a man, especially, I've read books, not on like depression, but I've read books Navy SEALs wrote. I can't remember the name. I think the guy's name was Sean Adams that wrote it years ago. I graduated college and everything. I was interested. I had this like weird kick where I was interested in going into the SEALs, and I was like, you know, training and shit. But in reality, I was like, I knew in my heart, I was like, man, if I have to go to the SEALs, man, that's fucked. Like my life's fucked up. If that's like the best thing I have going for me. Nothing against the SEALs, you know, cause I'm like totally against the war machine. You know what I mean? So that's the way I was kind of thinking about it. But, what was I saying now? I keep losing myself every single time I get into anything, but I was talking about faith-based approaches. Man, I'm like killing myself right now. I'm gonna have to end up stopping this recording or listening to myself and then going off again. All right, so now I remember what I was talking about. I gotta like do something to stay on pace better. So what he was as a man, like I said, as a man, like a lot of guys that are depressed, the problem that they have, I can't speak for women. I think it's much more of variables that are in your life, what's going on, where you currently are in your life. I'll tell you for sure, when I was working at the post office doing this podcast, I was not in the same mood that I am in now. I wasn't as happy as I am now. And part of that was because of the job I was doing. It was physically strenuous on my body, which isn't the problem. It was the money. I was working so hard. I was working long hours. And the amount of money I was making compared to what I make now is half. So I was making about 50% of what I make now. Base salary. Yeah, I got overtime. Overtime did not make a big difference. It did not make a big enough dent for me to actually feel like it was a good job I was doing. The amount of work that I was doing, I did not. I mean, everyone always wants to get paid more, but I did not value the work that I was doing. So I think when men have... And men don't really care about, by the way, like loving what they do. That's like not a thing that men really give a shit about. I hate when, oh, you gotta do. I mean, I was told, I shouldn't have listened. I listened to my mom and my sister when I got out of school. They were telling me not to take jobs out of college that had nothing to do with my major. Even though they made money, they had nothing to do with my major, and they looked bad on my resume. And oh my God, that's something that you didn't want to do. But really, the money matters, right? For men, money matters much more than women. Women should do things that they actually want to do because they don't like to work to begin with, because they have their capacity for it is not the same as men generally, right? So men, you should just go and take the job that makes you money in the very beginning of your career. Honestly, that's what you should be doing. Now, you don't have to listen to my advice, but I didn't do that. I fucked up for sure. And I had a few years potentially where I could have been making decent money, like a good maybe 2 years, 3 years out of college. I could have been making like 50 G's plus a year, but I wasn't. I was making shit money. Working as like a security guard at a hospital. A fucking idiot. So, man, there's a bunch of variables that aren't being fulfilled. There is a correlation. So, if variables, for example, like, you know, your job, how much you make, how much you have in the bank, if you're in good physical condition, if you have a girlfriend, how much interaction you're having with people in general each day, if you're going outside, if you're getting sun, there's a lot of variables that affect you in your depression, and a lot of them are things that if you go to a doctor, if you go to a doctor or a therapist, they are not going to fix that for you. They're not going to fix your shit job. They're not going to fix your shitty work ethic. They're not going to be able to fix you being in shape or not. There's things that, unfortunately, as a man, no one's going to come along to help you with. It's not like women, where women are like, well, I'm very pretty, but, you know, I don't have this job and I don't have anyone to support me. And then, oh, here comes a man to come help you with that. You know, here comes a man to marry you and help you with your college loans that you haven't paid off yet for the last 10 years. You know what I mean? So that's the reality of the situation. And no one wants to hear a guy complain about it. Like, in reality, complaining about it, unfortunately, literally does fucking nothing for you if you're a man. It's stupid. It's pointless. It's useless. You pretty much just have to bear down. You have to bite down on your fucking mouthpiece, and you need to just go hard and be a savage. Otherwise, just pussy out and crawl into a shell like everybody else does. Like a majority of guys in today's day and age. You know how many dudes I hear about? Because I get DMs from chicks, right? Because I'm on Twitter. I was on Twitter. I had like a fully doxxed account. I stopped that. I have like a whole new anonymous account. There's some groups of people, circles of people that I talk to in the Bitcoin community. And you know how many women like are messaging me here and there, just and it's not hitting on me or anything. They're just telling me about like their situation with their boyfriends, and their boyfriends are just fucking bums. And they're guys that are maybe my age, a couple years older maybe. So guys that are like in their mid 30s, a lot of these dudes legit don't have fucking jobs, or they work like part time. They'll work 20 hours a week, and they'll bring home 30 G's a year. Living like in their parents' fucking basement or like in their parents' guest house. You know what I mean? Like that's currently what is happening. And it's a millennial problem as well as like this new gen maybe. And I think that it kind of just shows that there's a bunch of really weak dudes. And the worst part about this whole thing is that you have women that are like supporting these guys. They're paying, when they go on trips, the women are just paying for everything. I'm not saying nowadays the way shit is, and the way that chicks be playing dudes, I'm not saying that the chick shouldn't pay at all. I personally usually pay for most of everything. Pretty much everything when it comes to meals, like pretty much all the time. If we're traveling, maybe the person will split hotel with me, the hotel cost, the girl, but not even really that happens. So usually I pay for everything, but I can understand guys that don't want to pay for everything nowadays. To be honest, because there's a lot of women out there playing dudes for meals, essentially. And they're having a meal with you, they're getting a free meal, they're ordering a bunch of shit, and then they're going home. And they're never talking to you again. So you're just like, you're just rolling the dice and losing, like, over and over again. So yeah, like I said, I like Vivek's approach, talking about mental illness. He likes faith-based approaches. I think he was a little too nice during the debates. And yeah, this is like a pump Vivek show. Like, suck them off show right now, because everything I write down, I just love everything the guy says. I like Trump, obviously. If it was between him and Trump, I would be conflicted, but I probably would still be voting for Trump, just because I know it pisses off the left wing so fucking much, and I feel like what they're doing to him is insane, and the fact that it's, like, not being covered correctly, and the fact that we're going through a debate, and Chris Christie, as well as, what's his name? Ron DeSantis go after Trump and say Trump should be here, Trump this, that, the other thing. You guys are, the fact that no one, Vivek has been the only one that's mentioned it, no one even like mentions what they're currently doing to Trump. Like they're doing everything to lock this motherfucker up for nothing. Like they have nothing on him. We have judges assessing value, property value of houses now at this point, like incorrectly, being arbiters of shit like that. I mean, everything that's coming out to me, I'm just like, eh. It's all bullshit. Like no one believes the witch hunt at this point, right? And the fact that these Republicans are up on stage debating, and then they have the gall to complain. Hey, guess what? Trump's up how much for me? Trump is up like 50 fucking points in the polls against all of you jerk-off motherfuckers. You think he needs to show up to this shit? He doesn't need to show up. He should come to answer to you, America. What is he answering to America about right now? What's the point? No. You want him to show up on stage because you want a gotcha moment, because you have no chance of fucking beating him, and you think if you get a gotcha moment, you can ruin him, and you can ruin his fucking campaign moving forward. And guys like Chris Christie, probably that's the thought process for him. He's not interested in winning anything. He's interested in just tearing down everything in terms of, like, Republicans running. He's essentially a Democrat running. He's not a Republican. I think DeSantis just thinks he can, like, have a chance to beat Trump. But there's no reason for him to, there's nothing for him to answer for in terms of what is currently going on in the country today. He doesn't run the fucking country anymore. He has nothing to answer. The only thing, he could sit there and talk about how they're going at, the government's doing everything they can to go after him, how the deep state establishment fucking hacks are doing everything they can do to go after him. And that's the reason why these Republicans are coming out, like Christie, like DeSantis are coming out and saying this, because they're being told by people, advisors in D.C., to say this stuff. It really goes to show what everyone in the swamp and everyone in the establishment, where they are pointing their support and who it is that they do not want back in office. The fact that you notice all of these people are just going after Trump. It has nothing to do, actually, really, with wanting to beat Trump. It's much more them wanting to destroy Trump and also being on the right side, because they're part of the establishment. They're part of the swamp. They do not give a fuck. They do not give a single fuck if it's a Republican or Democrat that gets elected, as long as it's not Trump getting elected. That's the whole point of this entire thing. That's why they want him to show up. The only one that wasn't saying things about Trump like that was Vivek, and I thought Vivek was a little too nice last night. He kept saying that these are good people on stage, this, that, the other thing. I disagree. I think that maybe if I had to sit there and make like a judgment call on good people that were on stage, I would put maybe the guy from just straight up after hearing them last night speak, knowing a little bit about their background, I would say the guy from North Carolina, I would say is, or North Dakota, is probably a good guy. He seems all right. He seems pretty based. I would say Vivek's an actually like a good guy. I would say Ron DeSantis maybe is a good guy. And then other than that, I wouldn't even put Tim Scott in that category. And why wouldn't I? Because he supports the war in Ukraine. It's a fucking joke. So I pretty much throw like at all those people, none of them are really good people, right? So I think that what's going on with Vivek right now is he must be getting some sort of DC advisory, or people in his campaign are telling him to kind of ease off the gas because he was too extreme in the last debate, which appeals to people like me, appeals to voters like me, but it's not going to appeal to the Republican, maybe a base or the establishment Republican types, meaning it's not going to appeal to the country club Republican types. People like me, the new Republican, the new, I don't even like to call myself a Republican, like the new right wing conservative movement people. When Vivek says to disband the Department of Education, he talks about how, the other thing is that he said that trannies are mentally ill, and he said especially children, that we should not be chopping, mutilating children and affirming their mental illness. He was the only person on stage to say that, and nobody really supported what he said. Everyone is afraid, which is so crazy. This is where we have become, like, the Democrat Party, give it literally 15 years, maybe? 10? 10? What is it? 2023? I would say give it 15 years ago. If you said that on stage at a DNC debate, people probably wouldn't bat an eye. They'd be like, yeah, it's pretty moderate DNC opinion. If you said that you think the trannies are mentally ill and they need to like fix whatever they got going on. But now it's so taboo to go on stage and say something like that, even at a Republican debate. Like, no one wants to touch that with a fucking barge pole. Nobody wants to touch any of that shit. They're all afraid to, even though it's true, even though that Republican voters generally, they do not want their kids to be fucking mutilated. They don't want their kids to be abused. They don't want their kids to be affirmed in school, claiming that they're a boy when they're a girl. All that bullshit. Yeah, like I said, Nikki Haley's pretty shitty with her comments about how, and it wasn't only her, I think it was also the best is when they went off on Vivek because of the war in... Oh, I also forgot that Mike Pence was there too. You forget, he's like an old man. He's like fucking falling apart and shit. They went off on him because he does not support the Ukraine war. Pretty much everyone on that stage is a warmonger, with the exception of maybe Ron DeSantis doesn't support the war in Ukraine. I haven't seen his opinions on it yet. The guy from North Dakota, I have no idea. But other than that, everybody else is in support of that war. And that's probably because people they know or are related to are funding or making money off of the war in some sort of way. Like I said, you know, that's speculation. I don't have numbers to prove that. I would love to. I wish I had numbers to fucking prove that. But they were freaking out. They were like, you need to show power through stability or some stupid shit like that. Mike Pence was like freaking out. But Mike Pence is funny because every single thing that Trump did that was good, he always makes it as if he was the one that did it as the vice president. Everybody knows it's just a nominal position. Like, vice president doesn't really do dick. They're just around shaking hands, doing their little like bullshit networking pretty much to look good on camera. But he makes it like every single good thing that Trump did was him, and every bad thing was Trump. So he has no chance. Mike Pence has zero chance of winning anything. He's too boring. He's a decent VP, I'd say. He's just there. you know, doing his thing. People hated him because he was so religious and shit, but I don't even think he's that right wing. He's kind of a pussy. Yeah, maybe he's religious, but he's not really fucking that right wing. I think I have more extreme views than he does. I have more extreme views than probably most of the people on that stage, with the exception of maybe Vivek. Him and I might be on like the same fucking level, because pretty much everything he says, I'm just sitting there going, yeah, he's right. Correct. I'm like affirming the shit out of this dude right now. I like his idea of a zero-based budget, meaning the federal government should be budgeted at a zero baseline. Like, all right, we're starting from zero. What is it? And this is how you cut costs, essentially. You say, what is it that we need? Like, what is essential to us running the government? And you start at $0, and then you build it as time goes on. And then that's actually how you can balance a budget out. And that would make sense. I mean, the guy fucking ran businesses. He ran companies. And it is right, because you can go through and you can evaluate each item that's on the button. By the way, if our politicians in D.C. had to do that, they're so inefficient, and there is so much money in the budget, and there's so many different items that are so bullshit. There's so much crap just like thrown in there. Millions and millions and millions and millions, and turns out to be billions and billions and billions and billions, and then it becomes trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars worth of shit. You would be able to cut out a lot, and it would also take forever. It would take our politicians probably a full year to figure out the budget situation, and they would not be reading through all of it. Their staff members would, and their staff members would advise them and tell them what to say about it. You have to understand, these people in DC, they're coming out with these, like, this budget will probably be like 400 to 1,000 pages, and they'll have to vote on it in like 2 days. None of them will read it. It'll be their advisors that read it and then give them like a description of what it is. Imagine fucking signing off on something. This is so crazy, such a crazy idea. This is how big the government has become, so bureaucratic. You are signing off on something that you did not read, that is affecting the entire country, and is the spending of other people's money, like $4 trillion or $5 trillion of their dollars, too. To think about not even reading the fucking thing. And that's what happens every single time. And I hope they shut down the government. And honestly, I don't give a fuck if they open back up. I don't care. I think there's enough people in this country, in all honesty. If the government was shut down for years, and the military is just not the military anymore, there's enough people in this country where if we got invaded, we'd be able to fight off whoever the invaders are anyway. It's to the point where we don't even, like, fucking need the military. I hate to say that. It sounds, like, horrible to say. For ourselves, for the U.S. sovereignty, maybe for Canadian and Mexico sovereignty. I wouldn't even say Mexico's, because Mexico has tons of drug cartels where they're armed to the fucking tits, right? But I would say for Canada's sake, they're lucky that we have our military. Because people in America, the United States, we generally are pretty sovereign in the sense that we all have fucking guns. Nobody's going to infiltrate, or nobody's going to try to take over like entire towns of people that are strapped. They're just going to have to bomb the fucking joint if they want to kill everybody. So I think that's it in terms of politics stuff. Oh, yeah, that's it in terms of politics stuff. Now, I will speak about, I mean, I have one thing. So, the CCP, in the middle of Trump getting that overestimated property evaluation from a judge or whatever, underestimated, whatever it fucking was, the CCP sent Hunter Biden $250,000 via wire, and Hunter used the address of his father to get that $250,000 wire money. Right, that came out the other day. Has anyone heard about that? Probably not. And why is it that you haven't heard about it? Because they pull out the Trump card. They literally will hide the news cycle from you. They always come out with a news story that's supposed to be a really big deal that isn't really a big deal in the middle of something really bad happening with the Democrats. They do this all the time. It's like a common theme from them. We should just list like all of the terror. It's almost like you forget. Like right now, I think Hunter Biden is going to get indicted or something, and then he's going to have to go through this case, and then they're talking about impeaching Biden. I don't know if that's going to happen, but then he's going to have to go through discovery phase also in his case as well. So we'll just see. We'll keep an eye on everything that's going on, but it seems right now there's really not much. They're just trying to impeach Joe Biden. And I've also gotten to this point where I'm looking on Twitter, and it seems like I said, they got the Krasenstein brothers running like their DNC horseshit down everyone's throats. They're definitely paid actors. And then there's also like these weird DeSantis simps, the D simps. And they seem like they're fucking paid actors too, man. It's super weird because they show up all over my feed. And my feed is pretty diverse with people. So it's weird that I'm getting DeSantis. I'm getting like nothing but the DeSantis simps as well as the Krasenstein bros. And it's really weird. Like there's a lot of infighting in the Republican Party right now. It's odd. Like I would take Trump, I would take DeSantis, I would take Vivek, right? I would go Trump one, Vivek two, DeSantis three. If I had to pick an order, I think that Tim Scott might end up being like the I would love for the vice presidential running mate to be Vivek. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it'll end up being like Tim Scott because he's black, because that's what we have to do now. We have to do the left-wing politics bullshit in the Republican Party. You know, we actually don't care about merit anymore. We're just like, he's a black guy, so we're going to throw him in there. And this idea that like more years of government is a net positive is hilarious too. They always pull that one out in the debate. They're like, well, he doesn't have years of experience like I do. And I'm like, yeah, well, the system's been fucked for the last like 30, 40 fucking years. And yeah, you're great. You have 20 years of experience. What the fuck did you do in that time period? I always find that as a hilarious like tool and something that left-wing scholars say too. Like the left wingers are always like, well, you know, Joe Biden has 40 years of experience, so okay, and he has 40 years. Yeah, if I work 40 years as a janitor in the near local school and I do a terrible job the whole fucking time, that doesn't mean shit. It doesn't matter how many years I have on the job. It matters what I do while I'm there for those 40 fucking years. So that's a load of horse shit too. I see them always pull out of their ass. What I've seen, so very last thing, I'm gonna go into some culture stuff. It's not much. I mean, I talk about culture a lot this episode, I think. Oh no, here's another thing where the debaters, when they talk about I did, when they talk about the economy, I love when they do that too. I added this many jobs. I did this. I did that. No, you didn't. You're just the president. Like people, I wish that people in this country actually understood the roles of government and the balance of the three different branches, and how the legislature is the one that comes up with the laws, and the president is just there to like pretty much approve it and enforce it. So when there's jobs added to the economy, you could say things like this: during Trump's years, this many jobs got added to the economy. But it doesn't mean Trump added jobs to the economy. It doesn't mean Biden added jobs to the economy. You know, during this time, Biden's tenure right now, there has been an addition of a lot of jobs. Are they good paying jobs? No, they're not. They're horrible paying jobs. There's people that are picking up multiple jobs, right? And that's because the jobs that are being added are not good jobs, right? But now, is it from Biden executive order policies and legislative policies? Yeah, I'm sure. But the president doesn't really actually have that big of an impact on the economy. Nowadays, they have more of an impact than they ever have before because of unconstitutional executive orders. But in terms of like claiming that you're the one that caused the economy to do so well is just kind of it's kind of bullshit. And they do it every election cycle. It's always a talking point. It's always a shit talking point, and that'll be a talking point when Trump goes to run in the primary against, or when he wins the primary, and then he goes to run in the presidential. It'll be, oh, you lost this many jobs at the very end of your tenure, and it's all because of COVID. Like, it's all hoax numbers, you know, like selectively modified or edited at this exact perfect point so you can come out with like your 40% increase or whatever. You know, it's disingenuous ways to view statistics. And if you look into statistics, you start to notice that that's what they do. And it sucks seeing all this. Your eyes start to open up. Once I had this podcast, my eyes started to open up to really what goes on in DC and the way in which they craft the media narrative. The way they look at statistics, the way they present them to the people. And really, they're banking on a few different things. They're banking on you being an idiot. You not being, or you be also being emotional. It's like three different things. It's like they're hoping you're an idiot, they're hoping you're not diligent and you don't look into things, and they're hoping that you're emotional. Those are like the three things, and they use it all the time. They use George Floyd was like an emotional argument. Also, you're an idiot and you don't look into things, so you don't watch the full video of how George Floyd died, how he OD'd. He was taking, like, he could have died like three different ways because of the different types of drugs he was on. It's like he could have died, like, he could have OD'd from like two or three different drugs. They don't even know. So that's what they do. So yeah, there's this big debate right now going on Twitter. I guess the manosphere is what they call it now. It's like the red pill people, I think. I don't know the difference. I think the red pill people are more like the Andrew Tate crowd, and then the manosphere people are the Romo Tomasi guy, Rolo Tomasi, and Mark Sartain, Michael Sartain. I think that's the manosphere guys, where they're like masculine frame, bro. Act this way. You want to get bitches? I see Michael Sartain shit is hilarious because it's always like advertisements. You want the hot chick? Those are the advertisements, and it's like, dude, you are appealing to like these basement dwelling fucking beta dorks, right? And I don't even like using the word beta because I feel like it's overused, it's overhyped. But that's who you are fucking appealing to all the time. Like if I see his, the only thing I would ever care about if I see one of those things, if I see one of those advertisements, and this is why I followed him originally, he was talking about making money. That's all I cared about. He was like, yeah, you want to make money like from home on the side. I'm like, fuck yeah, dude, that sounds great. But I don't need some dude to tell me how to like be masculine, how to treat women or how to impress women. Or his whole thing, what he does is he helps you modify your Instagram account, your Tinder account, your Facebook, your LinkedIn to make yourself ooze masculinity and make women like attracted to you, have this it's kind of like a weird fast food guide. It's sad. It's like an algorithmic thing that he's been able to implement with people where it's the best way to put it. It like hits women perfectly in the neurotransmitter department, I guess is the best way to try to put it. Like you have to act like you got a lot going on, but also you're kind of secretive and you're kind of mysterious, like that whole thing. That's how he sets people's Instagram accounts up to get these chicks in the like to bag chicks essentially. But the problem is if you act like you're doing all those fucking things and then when the chick meets you in real life, like yeah, you may get the first date, dude. You might get your foot in the door. It's like lying on your application. It's like lying on your resume. You may get your foot in the door, it's great, but then when you actually have to do the fucking job, you're fucked. So I don't know. I don't know about those guys, but I have seen in the right wing fighting with the red pill community, fighting with the manosphere. Right wingers like Matt Walsh, Ben Shapiro, Jeremy Boring, the nerdier of the crew. I would say that Matt Walsh is probably the least nerdy of those guys. They're fighting over no fault divorce, and that chick Pearly things, Pearl Davis is I think her name, the ginger chick that's kind of grifty. She's like grifting. I feel like, I mean, she seems like a nice girl. She's fucking super grifty though. She's always like fighting people and saying that men are fucked, and it's like, thanks, bitch. Thanks for letting me know. Like, yeah, I experience it. I don't need you to speak on my behalf. Like, get the fuck out of here. But she's telling Matt Walsh, she's telling Ben Shapiro that men pretty much should not get married because of no fault divorce. There's no benefit of getting married nowadays. And honestly, she doesn't make terrible points. You got to make sure when you get married that like you are very, very sure as a if you're a high value dude and like you have a good job, you have to, and you're looking at one of these bitches that are like a little erratic and nasty with you and shit, and you make a lot of money and you provide zero problems for them, and all they are is problems for you. You need to seriously consider whether or not you are going to marry this chick, because you can be in a scenario where you end up getting married and then you get fucking wrecked because she divorces you, she takes half of everything you're worth, and now you're paying her half of every single dollar that you make, that you clear after the government already gets their piece. You're paying her that money as well as child support if you have kids, which the debate really is eliminating no fault divorce. And that's something I've heard in the right wing. I've heard actually, I think I heard Steven Crowder talk about it as well recently, and that's because he had divorced, his wife divorced him. She recorded him and put out all this shit. I don't know. That is, you know, I missed a lot of this the last 2 years. I didn't miss it, but you guys missed my opinion on a lot of things the last 2 years is really more the point than anything. But just imagine how my what my opinion probably was on that, and you're probably right. You know, Crowder kind of looked like a little baby. He's kind of crying like a little bitch, being a little like pussy, I guess. But does that necessarily mean that throughout his entire marriage and relationship he was abusive? No, you caught him at in an and think about it, if that recording, if that device, that ring device or whatever it is that he has, that home video, that home camera. Imagine that thing was on all the time and he's been married to that woman. I think her name's Hillary. He's been married to Hillary for like a long fucking time. He's been married to her for more than 10 years, he was. I want to say more like he was married to her for like maybe 15 years. And that's the best that she can provide and claim that he was abusive. I just don't see it being that good of a case. I'll just be honest. And that's from the outside looking in. I do think that Crowder can kind of be. I don't think his comedy's great. I think the guys he has on are fucking funny. I think Nick DiPaolo's funny. Brian Callen could be really funny. Jim Brewer is like a legend. Him having fucking, what's his name? Alex Jones is epic. Like, it's awesome. He has Alex Jones on Fridays just talking shit. So he's doing big things over there. It's a good, I mean, he's good to have there. Do I necessarily think that? Oh, and then him with the Daily Wire shit that went down. I think the Daily Wire is kind of slimy with their operations. I think they have to do things to cut costs to make money because they're like demonetized all over the place and shit. And I don't know. I don't know what to think about a lot of this stuff. I'm in the loop in terms of public information wise, but privately, like, I have no idea who Steven Crow how Steven Crowder deals with people. I like DePaulo as a comedian. I would hope that DePaulo is smart enough to only be involved with like cool people. You know, but what the fuck do I actually know? My opinion on them is kind of like what I see in the media in terms of what Crowder did with his wife. I just don't see it. I mean, I see him definitely as being like super petty and bitchy and pussy about it. I probably wouldn't have taken that approach, but who knows what happened before that? Who knows what's transpired the last 15 fucking years? Like, I have no answers. Same thing with Dana White. Like, Dana White's wife slapped him and then he slapped her back in response. They've been married forever. They've literally been married for over like 20 years. They got kids, they got family. And he made a really good point. He himself said, he's like, you know, I was embarrassed for my kids, I was embarrassed for my wife, and I apologized. We apologized like together to our kids, and it's a family matter, and that's it. And in our this many years, we had zero issues, and we both got drunk that night, and it was bad. It was just bad, and that's it. And he's like, I don't know anybody other than my kids, like an apology. I don't give a fuck what anybody else thinks. And he's right. Like, that's really how you handle it. You handle it family to family. So it's no fault divorce thing. I have a very good point because you get a divorce for no reason is the point. And there needs to be some sort of implementation. There needs to be a safety where if a woman wants to divorce her husband, yeah, that's fine. Okay. The only thing you're going to get is child support, though. That's how that should work. There should be no reason that you're divorcing your husband for no reason at all, right? You have no cases of domestic violence, domestic abuse, sexual abuse, whatever, whatever. And you just want to simply divorce your husband because some other dude is in your fucking DMs, and you want to go like fuck him, and he has more money. There's no reason to divorce. If you want to do that, that's fine, right? The no fault divorce. If you want to do that, that's fine. But there should be some sort of protections for men that incentivize them to actually want to get married. Meaning, there should be some sort of protections like the state shouldn't fucking make you pay this woman now half of your money just because she simply doesn't like you anymore and there's a new guy that's in her fucking DMs. It's horseshit that that's the way that things are handled in this country. It's pathetic and it's sad, and that's why it's incentivized. Essentially, they're incentivizing people to get divorced. That's what they're doing, you know. It's easy. They make it easy is the point. Like, divorce should, I mean, fucking marriage is like a hard thing, man. There's a lot of hardship that you have to go through. Relationships, same thing. It's a commitment. It's not the same thing, but it's a commitment. It shouldn't be easy. And they make it easy by saying, don't worry, you can just fucking opt out for no reason. You know, if there's a reason, it's a different story, right? But they're, yeah, just opt out because you feel like it. That's it. Good game. Good game to the man. Get fucked. You'll see your kids every other weekend, and then you'll pay child support for the kids, and you'll pay half of whatever you make to this fucking woman in alimony. Have fun. Oh yeah, and also the house, by the way, it's not yours. We're gonna cut it in half. So I mean, it is definitely a problem, and it's something that should probably be talked about much more amongst guys. I mean, I think that what I've noticed as time has gone on, as I've gotten much more aware, and I've lost this like right wing. This like conservative lean. I have a conservative leaning, but my point is I'm much more black-pilled than I was before, meaning that I am much less optimistic in terms of like cultural stuff. You know, you got Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro's special case, married his wife when he was like fucking 20 years old. You know, he proposed to her 2 weeks into dating her, and they're both virgins. I mean, these are unusual people, right? And he's like trying to take his scenario and extrapolate it to everyone else that's already wrecked and like in their mid 20s or 30s trying to figure out marriage. So that's kind of the problem, is you have like these people that aren't really. And I always thought this is why, actually, part of the reason why I started the podcast is because there is no one to relate to the average working class dude. I was a blue collar guy, you know, I went to college was whatever. I did all right in it, but after I got out of college, my degree wasn't really useful anywhere, and it wasn't a well-known degree, so I got fucked pretty much by college. And then I went and I worked like a blue collar job for 3.5 years carrying mail for the post office. Then I kind of worked my way into like what I do now in cybersecurity. But it's tough. And I thought that I'm not some kid that went to fucking Yale. I'm not like Ben Shapiro. I'm not super smart. I mean, Matt Walsh is kind of a little different because he never went to college either. He just started his own blog. So that's pretty OG. But there was definitely some struggle in there, right? And not saying that Ben Shapiro or fucking Michael Knowles didn't have struggle, but their struggles are totally different, is the point. And their life experience is totally different than what I experienced. So having a podcast from my perspective, I thought would be very valuable because I relate much more to regular ass people. And those guys don't really relate to regular people, but they're like really smart and they have this cult following of people for the reason of them being very intelligent. So yeah, I mean, those guys, they kind of have like these anomaly situations, and that's why they believe in marriage so much. I believe in marriage. I do. I think it's a good inst it should be, you know. It's important. It's an important institution. It should be valued, it should be cherished. The problem is that I'm worried about is finding somebody that believes in it the same way as me. That's more what I'm worried about. I'm not actually like really worried about. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's all I'm worried about. So, that'll conclude this one, and I guess I'll talk to you guys maybe a week or two from now. Thank you for tuning in. Everybody have a wonderful weekend and take care.